Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music. Hey guys, welcome to the 87th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, storytelling, and directing. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enloe. Today we've got Sandeep Parikh on. He's a veteran filmmaker, an actor, performer, writer. He's a man of all, a jack of all trades, the master of all of them. And he's got a new interactive series, Live on Echo. It's a new platform. It's kind of like a choose-your-own-adventure sort of situation, but it's hilarious and incredible and so complicated and fascinating to think about. He's going to really dive deep on what it is to make a new project on a brand new platform. It's kind of the prototype in a lot of ways for this. He's their first series, basically. So it's a great episode. It's awesome if you're curious about emerging technologies and alternative forms of storytelling.
Yeah, and the other cool thing about Sandeep is that both Matt and I have met him a very long time ago, right when we kind of started making videos. Yeah. He was kind of famous for a little while. He was on one of the first big web shows called The Guild, that was a Felicia Day show, and he's just done a bunch of cool things since then. So it's going to be really fun to talk to him about our history together and also about what he's doing today.
But before that, Oren, I've been dying to know, what have you been working on lately?
Well, I've been working on this little campaign for NVIDIA. Did I ever talk about it last week?
I don't know. We haven't edited that episode yet, so I don't remember.
Okay. Well, regardless, oddly enough, we're shooting last Friday. We shot last Friday and we're shooting again Tuesday. We took the weekend and Monday off just because of actor availability.
Mm-hmm. Kind of nice, right?
Yeah, really nice. But why it's really, really nice is tomorrow we're shooting a Rube Goldberg machine, mm-hmm. just something that we all love and it all think is just the most simple thing in the world.
No, yep.
And it is just impossible to make work. Everyone told us like, oh, those are really hard to make work. And I'm like, what? It's like a domino is falling and they hit
dominoes and a ball bounces and then some fire goes off.
Okay, we'll do a few takes. Yeah, but it's like we literally, we're shooting first thing tomorrow morning. We have yet to get the machine to work all the way through once.
You haven't even gotten it to work halfway through.
Yeah, we've gotten halfway through. But there are things where I'm like, wait, isn't a balloon supposed to pop at this point? Isn't this the blind supposed to go? Like, all these things are supposed to happen. And the guys working on it are like, yeah, we could do that. I'm like, what do you mean we could do that?
Like, that's the plan. I have to shoot this thing.
We have the whole crew here tomorrow. So anyway, if you're doing a Rube Goldberg machine, just schedule at least one day, not to build it, but to put it in position of where you're going to shoot it and get it to work. The OK Go video, you know, they'd made a famous one and it supposedly took them a very long time to get it right.
I believe it.
Which makes sense. So another interesting thing that happened today that I haven't even told you about yet is I had lunch with one of our listeners. His name is Ryan Chamley. He's from Australia. He'd emailed us before.
Yeah, that name rings a bell.
He made this show that got kind of really popular on Facebook about, it's kind of like, he said he was inspired by workaholics, but it's about these guys that work at like a Best Buy type shop, the guys and girls, like a group of people in Australia. And it got millions of views on Facebook. And he's been directing all sorts of things in Australia. And he decided to fly to LA and like see what the scene is like here. And I got to say, he's having a pretty good time because he had lunch with one of his favorite podcasters.
Man, that's incredible. Way to go, Ryan.
But we had lunch at Tender Greens, which is
a
place I love because they have delicious salads.
Sure. The Happy Vegan's my go-to.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun to order.
Yeah.
Fun to tell to a PA also.
It's like a Happy Vegan, but with like the delicious meat part. But I went to one right next to Sawhorse, the production company I'm working with right now. And I asked him if he wanted to come check out like what a like real kind of gritty production company looks like. And so he came with me to Sawhorse and he met everyone and he kind of saw what all the different people are working on.
Sawhorse, I love it. I love it. There's no other production company like them. It's the most wild and gritty of all of them, I would say. It's not unlike a frat house where everybody, instead of
it feels like an indie film production,
they're just like working nonstop on like the coolest videos.
Yeah, it feels like an indie film production, but they're doing like, I mean, one, Adam was editing a show for TBS with Lea Michele, and you know, someone else was doing these like videos for New York Comedy Festival, and someone else is color correcting something, and
yeah,
someone else has just finished producing a, you know, big show for Adaptive.
Yeah, yeah. And everyone's like working nonstop. There's a person on the couch, like someone's pacing in the, you know, the parking lot, like shouting about a deal. It's great. It's the best.
But also Ryan had a meeting today at UTA and this guy, Todd, that happened to be in the office is at UTA. And I was like, oh, you're at UTA. Like, you guys should talk about this meeting. Maybe he can give you some tips. Like, you know, it was just kind of this like very LA film, not like snotty in any way or pretentious in any way. It's actually the opposite. It's
it's a warehouse filled with computers.
Yeah. Go hang out with like a bunch of people that are working on things and talk to them about what you're doing and then figure out like how you can be of help to each other. So I thought it was cool. And I was listening to Making Movies is Hard today, their latest episode. And Ulrich was talking about how when he was in LA, it's so fun because everyone he was with wanted to talk about their movies. And when he went back to San Francisco, even though he went back for a shoot, he said at lunch, everyone was talking about like the camera specs and stuff. And he was like, why do you care about the camera? We should be talking about the story, you know? And it made me realize, yeah, of course, we all love cameras and love 4K, 5K, whatever, all that crap. But really, we are interested in like, what are these stories we're telling? What are the characters we're making? What are these series? Like, how everything adds up. It's not just one thing or the other. So, I don't know. It was kind of a fun LA day for me. I mean, I know we live here. So, every day is LA.
Yeah,
I even met with Matt today at the Starbucks Reserve.
Yeah. I was there.
My favorite Starbucks.
It's pretty nice, you guys.
And Matt and I got recognized.
That's true. Wait, who did...
Drew Pierce.
Drew Pierce. Hey, man, thanks for listening to the podcast.
Yeah, and he's someone I actually met at a film festival like 10 years ago, but he was like, hey, you guys are Matt and Oren. I listen to your podcast. So anyway,
funny.
Not saying you got to move to LA to be a filmmaker. It does make things a little easier.
Yeah.
Before we talk to Sandeep, I'd just love to mention that, you know, if you guys can review us on iTunes and rate us, that is a huge for us. We will read any iTunes review we see. If you want to plug your film or whatever, we'll do that there. So please do that. And please email us with your thoughts and questions. It's like super helpful for us to get feedback. Otherwise, we're just kind of making up what we think is interesting. Okay, thanks, guys. We are going to talk to Sandeep now. So, Sandeep, you're here.
I'm here.
In the flesh.
What's Can you believe it, guys?
We did it.
No, I've asked
you're
Sandeep
welcome
to be on the podcast about ever since we started the podcast. Oddly enough, the first time I asked you, I don't think I even realized that you lived less than a block away from
me. Yeah, I didn't realize that either. It's
I
a
bet
trip.
I parked further than you live.
100%. You did.
Yeah.
No, you so absolutely you did. I live right down the road.
Oh, I should do that. Yeah.
So Sandeep is actually one of the first people I met when I moved to LA.
Wait, are there a lot of people that know where you live?
No, we and don't geo-chat.
Then they could, then they could find me.
I mean, everyone knows I live in Beverly Hills. Beverly Hills 90211. Trying to make it feel real by making it imperfect.
The Melrose Place like complex is around the corner from me, actually.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, right. In Los Feliz, nice. Not in Melrose.
Yeah, it's not on Melrose.
It's not on Melrose
Place. Where they shot it, actually?
The exterior, basically.
Okay, yeah, right.
Well, anyway, so when I moved to LA, one of the very first paid gigs I did was making this web series for Adam Film, where Matt worked and where Sandeep had a show, and I was talking to Peter Ignacio, the guy that was like kind of shepherding all the shows at the time. And Peter introduced, he was like, I told him I liked Legend of Neil, which is Sandeep's show. And he's like, you want to go have drinks with him? I'm going to have drinks. Like, you can join us. So I think my friend Avi and I played Jesus in our show. Avi kind of looks like Jesus. And we went, we had drinks with you, and we were like, I mean, we're pretty fresh to Hollywood. And I was like, yeah, it just seems like so daunting. Like these people that are writing TV shows and like, how would you ever get there? Like it's just so scary to try to ever break into the system. And you said to me, you're like, dude, you think in your head, there's like some magical like class of writer that is like amazing. And they just wake up and they can write amazing material and they get a ton of work and that you'll never be them. But the truth is like, we are those people.
Yeah.
You're like, we are the next generation of writers.
I like that guy.
Yeah. Like you and me and us, we're the ones that are going to be doing this stuff. And so I don't know. I always like was really impressed and kind of inspired by that like confidence of saying like, it's so easy to look at people and wish you were doing what they were doing.
Right.
But that's kind of like a cop out. And it's like you could be doing what they're doing.
It's beyond easy. It's more like it's like an illness to do that in a way. an illness that I have.
Sure.
We all have.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like looking at everybody else's garden and like their tomatoes look plumper.
Oh, man.
But yeah, it's just
about.
I do
have pretty plump tomatoes. Not going to lie.
Yeah.
Do you? Do you grow some tomatoes?
I do. We stopped. We had so many freaking tomatoes.
Well, now you have a neighbor that loves tomatoes, so please feel free to bring them over.
There you go.
I will.
But yeah, I guess my point was and still is, and this is the thing that I tell people when they ask or whatever, is like, just keep planting seeds. Don't worry about other people's garden. Like, don't worry. Just keep planting seeds and keep watering the garden, then you can't control how the shit grows. You can't be like, hey, I expected 7 papayas out of that tree. Like, that's not.
Yeah, that's not.
Like, that's not in your hands.
Sure.
You know?
Well, right, you know, it's funny. I'll dovetail off this
inspirational moment.
Sandeep as inspiration. This is a weird thing to say.
Guys,
this is weird. So I'll caveat over
my
it.
Ego.
Getting so, Sandeep here.
So I was working in the editorial department at Atom at the time. So I would like post videos and things like that. But I would work with the development team very loosely at that time. And I was so fucking jealous of you. I was insanely jealous of you. Because, you know, like Legend of Neil was like a great show.
Just a little
bit
of context.
You were the king of the hill.
You know how little they were paying.
Right? I do know how little they were paying.
Yeah.
But at the time I was like, you know, like that's exactly what I wanted to be doing.
Yeah.
And I think it actually did help as an inspiration to be like, oh, okay. Like this is a thing you can do. You were one of the first directors I knew who was like, who didn't have like a day job and was making a living and like made cool, weird internet content on your own terms, which is pretty rad.
Right. Yeah. And for our listeners that don't know, so Atom Film was Comedy Central's digital
website. It was their Funny or Die, basically.
Yeah. And Sandeep had a show called Legend of Neil, which was based on Legend of Zelda, but it's just some guy in like the world. It was a live action show.
Yeah. It's like stupid Legend of Zelda, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Just a, you know,
yeah,
a jamoke named Neil who gets sucked into the game and has to fight his way out.
And it was a comedy.
Yeah. Sorry to any Neils out there, but it's just like the most like lame name.
Yeah, you tried to like, what's the turd person? Oh, Neil. Great.
But and then I have some friends named Neil, so I feel terrible.
Yeah,
but
sorry, Neil.
Actually, no, that's I'm lying to make a joke. The real reason I named him Neil, I realize now, is because when I first saw The Matrix in the theater, I had thought, and this is no joke, I had thought that they were calling him Neil for like most of the movie. And I was like, that is so weird. Like, why are they celebrating this as like a cool name? And it was literally, and then when he like, you know, is in the subway station and like, you know, he's calling him Mr. Anderson over. He's like, my name is Neil. Like as if it was like the coolest thing. And I'm like, this is terrible. I mean, I love the movie, but I was like, why Neil? And then it was only after I rewatched it that I realized his name was Neo.
That is so funny. What a funny way to watch that movie.
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty stoned. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
Boy, that really got me.
That's like,
it's the Legend of Neil. Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. There's this religion, the Baha'i faith. You guys heard of these guys? Their god is called, his name is Bob.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I went to like their temple in Israel and they're like, yeah, the Bob says this and the Bob said
that.
And it turns out it's spelled like B-U-B. Mm-hmm.
So it's Bub.
Yeah. So I had a similar experience. Anyway.
Super funny.
Inspiration everywhere.
Indeed. Yeah.
Legend of Neil.
Yeah.
Neo. And you were also on the guild, obviously.
And well, yeah, I was just going to say, now I feel like you've both, both probably work more as directors than I do. So I think you're doing
well. You've got like a great acting career going as well, right?
So yeah. So Sandeep is the...
I tried to diversify my portfolio.
You playing the Indian guy on The Guild, right?
I was the Indian guy. Yeah. I tried out for the redheaded girl.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She was already cast, I guess.
Yeah.
So.
And
she's
the Guild
or whatever.
I'm guessing most people that listen to this know what that is, but it was kind of like, as I recall, like one of the first big web hits, like web series that were.
So both of these shows, I'd say, and I mean, certainly The Guild is I think significantly more popular, but both of them are what I call like Fight Club famous, mm-hmm. where like it's,
doesn't everyone love Fight Club? And
no, yeah, no, not a fan of Fight Club. It's, you remember in the movie when. You know, they're talking about, talk about Fight Club, but then, you know, you give looks to people. Mm-hmm. So like I was at like airport security once. This actually happened a few times at airport security. I think we have a fair amount of TSA fans. But I was in line as a brown guy. I'm often in line as a brown guy. I'm mostly, whenever I'm in line, I'm a brown guy.
Sure. Right.
And so, but at an airport, it's especially, it can be a little bit harrowing sometimes. And, the TSA agent was like, all right, this whole line, everybody move this way. You're going to go to this line, except for you. And he pointed at me. And this is in Manchester, New Hampshire. I'm from New Hampshire. Uh-huh. And I know how white that town is.
Sure, yeah.
That state is. And so I was like, oh boy, of course, in my hometown. Here we go. I assumed a finger was going up my butt in less than like 30 minutes. But yeah, he like called me up. Like to the front of the line, and he was like, hey man, I'm a huge fan of The Guild. And so it's like, you know, like not, it's not widespread. We have a deep fan base, not a very.
But it's a lot of depth, international. I mean, didn't you guys have an Xbox show?
It's international. I mean, I've been to like Australia, conventions, England. We got invited to the Czech Republic.
Oh yeah. Check that off the list, right? So
check that. Nice.
Off the list of republics. No, just a punster.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, it's been absolutely amazing.
Well, I think it's funny because I think, you know, you make an internet video and you look at the number of views and you're like, oh man, it just becomes this obtuse thing where it's like you just want it to be higher, but you never really associate those views with people watching them.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, like 100,000 people, 200,000 people, a million people. That's so many people. Of course you're going to run into people at the airport who love your shows.
Yeah, and then I just wonder if it's like the same 10 people watching it over and over again. I love it so much. But no, it's cool. It's cool. I mean, it's also interesting that none of it really translates to the next project necessarily.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
It's always like you're always starting over. You're starting from scratch every time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the problem with trailblazing, right? It's like there are plenty of like prominent online creators now who wouldn't know those shows or don't know Squares.
No, yeah, I'm sure most of our audience
we're total
is like,
old news.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
But it was like the high maintenance of its day.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
That's a perfect comparison. Yeah, that's perfect.
And you guys got like millions of, like $1 million to do the Xbox show, right? For like The Guild.
I don't know that our budget ever got up to $1 million. Is that what you're saying?
That's the rumor I heard.
That's certainly not what
No, what you got, what Felicia got to do the show for Microsoft.
She might have gotten a payday. I don't really know. We didn't really like... Discuss.
She wasn't like, hey guys.
Yeah, she wasn't going to like talk about her, you know, whatever her take was. I'm sure she got a good take, but she should take care of herself. She created it. She worked crazy hard at it. And that's how I make my money too, is just by as much as I can being the, having my production company produce the shows that I direct.
Oh, interesting.
And then keeping the underages and being really smart with the budget. And
so that's fascinating. I didn't realize. So you produce the stuff that you make as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you produce it yourself or do you have a producer at your company?
I have a producer as well. Jeff Winkler has produced most of my stuff.
Is he related to Henry?
Henry Winkler?
Yeah.
I don't think so, no, sadly.
Oh.
I'm sure he'd bring that up. Right?
Yeah. I feel like at this point, I mean, I married him his wife. I was at the officiant.
Oh, okay.
I didn't marry him.
Oh, you were the...
I officiated their wedding.
Okay.
So I think I would have known if Henry Winkler was there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
There's just a dude in the back.
In a leather jacket. Yeah. Did a guy show up on a motorcycle?
Hey.
You're like, oh, the jukebox isn't working. Yeah. Then...
Well, so speaking of shows that you direct, you just did a show for Echo.
Yeah. So I've been a little dormant because I've been working on this show for about 2 years. Over two years? We shot the pilot in 2015. Yeah, in October.
Damn.
Yeah. So I mean, there was an interim period, but the thing with this show, it's interactive. So we're sort of billing it as New Girl, but you're in control of Jess, and you can choose whether she slaps Nick in the face or kisses him, and then the narrative will progress from there, which is super fun. I mean, I was a huge fan of the Choose Your Own Adventure books, and I feel like this is truly like it fulfills the promise of that premise.
Right.
Right. So literally users are when they go to an Echo video,
and it's EKO in case anyone wants to look it up.
But like as a prompt comes up or as a character has to make a decision, literally like a graphic interface will like overlay and you'll kind of pick.
Yeah.
Like kind of different icons that would create different, your character creates different choices basically. Or you choose the for your character, I should say.
Right. Right. And so it's, what's I think particularly awesome about Echo's platform is that it's seamless. So it doesn't like freeze frame and then the three choices come up.
Yeah. There's no like timer that says like choose in 10, 9. Yeah.
But it is very visual.
There are some that have timers, but it's all like, there's still video still playing while the choices are being made, which I think it gives it this like real magical feeling because everything's sort of preloaded. And it's all very cleverly coded so that it really feels like you are in live editing the show. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just no stoppage or stuttering. And it's pretty, it just feels so intuitive. Right.
In the first episode of your show called That Time When, right?
That Moment When.
Sorry, That Moment
it's
When.
Okay. It'll be on the, everybody will be saying it soon. So it hasn't come out yet. So it's forgiven.
That Moment When I said the wrong name of the show. So it's about, so the main actress is Milana
Weintraub.
Yes. Who looks a lot like my wife, unfortunately.
It's so funny that you say that. I don't think I see that, but.
Oh, really?
They're brunettes.
Yeah,
both seem funny.
Everyone thought my wife was doing this giant AT&T campaign. You don't know how many people are like, so hey, congrats on the AT&T thing. She's like, God. In the first episode, she's at a party and she runs into a guy that knows her, but she can't remember for the life of her his name or where she met him.
Hashtag relatable.
Right. And so she's having a conversation with him and he's like, oh, remember that crazy thing you revealed to me? You know what I'm talking about. And she says, yeah, the thing about, and so she's kind of like mumbling and stuttering. And while she's doing that, you see three choices on screen.
You have to confess something either sexual, hygienic, or criminal.
And there's absolutely no way anyone clicks on anything other than sexual, right? You guys probably get feedback on what people click on, right?
Yeah, that'd be an interesting one to look at. Probably sexual is the one,
yeah.
Because
it's like the most clicked.
When but I was going through it.
They're all very funny. They should click them all.
Yeah, I was going to say the thing that I saw the pilot kind of a while ago because they use it as like an example of like how to do it right, right? It's like, oh, if you want to do an Echo show, like here's a way that's like really creative and fun.
It's part of the creator's guide for Echo, right?
Cool. Yeah, it's
I didn't know that.
Oh, did you not?
No.
That's how I saw it. Like they were like, this is an example of it working right.
Cool.
You nailed it. But the fun is that after that first or second decision, you realize that like part of the fun is in thinking of what is going to be the most surprising or funny version, right? Like this one's less about the plot necessarily and more about the different joke opportunities that you're setting up for yourself. Right. So it's like set up what punchline do I think is going to yield the most surprising result?
Yeah. And I think it's interesting when I watch it with people that, are first timers, you can definitely tell a lot about a person. Like they're definitely either Paragon or Renegade. there are folks that are like, I want to watch the world burn, and they pick the most awkward choices. And then there's the ones that are like, I want to win this for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so surprising who is who. Like my mom was picking all the funny ones. Like I think they're all funny in their own way.
Sure.
Like,
the craziest.
She's picking the craziest
ones. That's my instinct
too. I'm like, who are you, woman? And then there are other people that are like, want to win the game. And that's the other part is that we added a sort of a game element, which I don't think all the Echo shows do, and that became a real, sort of exponentially more complex thing to do into their platform. But
can we? Is it okay if we spoil the game in at least like the first episode or something? not spoil, but yeah, like kind of explain how it works. Because I think it's really fascinating. Yeah. And people have tried doing interactive entertainment forever, but Echo has a few things they've, a few layers they've added that make a big difference, I think. And part of that, the game. So in the first one where she's trying to remember this guy's name, every time you kind of choose a make a decision that is right, that you, she says the correct thing, you get a few letters of his name.
Right.
And you're kind of playing like a hangman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So by the end, you have the better you've watched the show, I guess,
right,
the higher chance you have to get this guy's name right when he, when you have to finally introduce him to your boyfriend at the end.
And then also the show has a memory, right? So you, in the next episode, you know, like those ramifications, it carries forward a little bit more.
I don't know that that's going to be the case.
Oh, is that?
Yeah. We
within the show, it has a memory, but
within each episode has a memory. We, I think, ended up sort of, hey, that, maybe that's a season two functionality of a thing. We had sort of designed the show to maybe do that. And then in the end, it was just like, it's
too many branches. Right.
It just wasn't worth the battle ultimately that it was going to have to be, because it's all just so new. So we just had to choose our battles.
Well, and I think, you know, the challenge of all of these different possibilities, like immediately you're like, oh, I could go this way, go that way. Oh, wait, I still have to shoot all of this. Right. Oh,
yeah, as a filmmaker, you're saying.
Yeah, as a filmmaker and as a producer as well, basically.
And in the writing of it was, and just the design of the show was really intense. I mean, we have all these crazy flow charts.
Well, don't they say for like an 8-minute episode, you need to shoot about 20 minutes of content? It's about two and a half.
Yeah, I think we did about 3x, roughly. Yeah,
that makes sense.
So if you edit 30 minutes, if you have 30 minutes worth of edited show.
Yeah. 10 minutes of an experience, as they call it.
And how much of those 10 minutes are, like kind of those waiting for you to decide.
Oh, not, I don't think that much.
Not significant.
No. I mean, the choice moments are about 5 to 10 seconds long. And then they will auto pick for you to keep it kind of seamless. So if you don't make a choice in time, then it's going to pick probably the worst choice for you.
What's interesting is that, because I've seen a couple other shows on Echo, but yours, they all kind of use the pause functionality a little bit differently. Like the other shows, you couldn't pause, like the video that Daniels did, which I found kind of frustrating, because one of the things I love about watching videos is like knowing how far into the video I am and much farther I have to go.
Right.
But on yours, if you pause it, it'll say there are about 4 minutes left.
Right.
It's about 3 minutes. They can't tell you how much time is left because they don't know how fast
what
you'll choose and
take.
What choices you'll make.
Yeah, totally. I love that Daniels one, though, man. I think that's a work of art.
I also do. I don't know if Matt likes it as much as we do.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was the other thing that they show you. And
I was blown away.
I love those guys. They're incredible.
Yeah.
And like, of course, if I were Echo, I'd give them something like this. This is like perfect for them.
So the Daniels are a directing duo that have directed
Swiss Army Man,
but the
incredible Nike
Turned Down for What?
Sure,
the music video,
best freaking music video.
If you want to see, do you guys see Magic Ball or Interesting Ball?
Interesting Ball.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, their work is just, they're two young guys. They're both named Daniel, and they're just like
brilliant.
If you watch them, you basically will want to be a director.
There's a video,
or you'll be like so intimidated and feel like I'm never going to direct.
I would recommend the Pigeons video, I think it's called. We'll link it in the show notes, but one of their very early ones, the one where the girl vomits fireworks.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
It's great. It's
are
like
they
super
all snorting
early.
Like what are those pixie sticks?
No. She's drinking and then starts barfing like
fireworks.
Yeah. And then it's
Katy
like
Perry ripoff.
It's all speed ramping and like basic compositing, just done really,
so
really well.
Yeah.
But still like a little like twixtery, like a little, you can see the edges basically. And it's nice to look at and then look at the Turn Down for What video. And you can see kind of like how they got there.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. It's great.
Cool.
So we'll put that in the show notes. But
So they did a show for Echo.
And the barfing weird things is always funny to me.
But their show for Echo is more like an art installation than storytelling.
You're like, this belongs in a museum for sure.
It's about a breakup, and you can kind of, the decisions the characters make keep forking, and you can jump to see any fork at any point in time.
And so, it's really just location that they are forking. They're not really,
Right.
Like and, the content is exactly the same.
But by the end, you see all the other forks in the background of the scenes. It's
so
like,
brilliant.
I can't even describe it. You just got to watch it.
Pretty,
the Daniels Echo, E-K-O, checking it, like Google.
Yeah, but check out my thing first.
Yeah, for sure. That feeling when. Just kidding. That moment.
That moment.
Kill you both.
And so Milana, we know her as the AT&T girl, obviously, but she's also on This Is Us, and she's going to be Squirrel Girl.
Yes.
And she's in a bunch
of
stuff.
New Warriors, yeah.
Cool. And she was your roommate.
So this is funny. She was my intern first.
Sure.
At your production company.
For Legend of Neil season 3.
Oh, wow.
I have a quick Milana story. She got me into my first big party at Comic-Con that year that we went for Legend of Neil. And she was like, this guy writes on Entourage, let us in. And we got him at the sci-fi party.
I love Milana.
Oh, she's genius.
She's the best.
Yeah, yeah. It was so funny. And I was like,
Of course she did.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I do. I write.
You're like, yeah, bro.
Yeah.
Not something you want to admit nowadays, I don't think.
Yeah, no, definitely.
But
not.
Back then, that's such a Milana thing to do. I love it.
So back to interactive filmmaking, another cool thing that Echo has kind of evolved since we've seen iterations of this in the past is they're really into it. They want your decision that you make to really affect the story and for you to see how it affects the story immediately. Like they don't want the viewer to feel like their decision doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And they also are really into callbacks. So like maybe if you make a decision in the beginning, you'll get a callback to it later on, which again makes you feel like when I watched your show or like the first couple episodes, I was wondering, cause there were some callbacks and I was wondering how much I had missed by not making a different decision, you know, which is cool.
Good.
Like it felt cohesive.
that's the idea.
Is that the goal is just like you want people to watch through and kind of.
If you watch it all the way through once and enjoy and like you created your own version of the story, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, but I hope that people.
I kind of wish you could rewind and make a different.
Yeah. I think we're trying to get them to work on that functionality. But, right now the ethos is sort of like, you know,
get them to do it all the way.
Yeah.
Through again.
Like we don't like, they don't want to be the books where you can like flip through and see how the
you
pages
should stick a finger into the book and then, you know, like you have
it's
to
like,
run
no,
out of opportunity.
You have to commit to a choice and it's going to make a difference.
Well, do you think there's one path that you take that you as the creator of the show would find the most satisfying?
We had to be pretty, I guess it's like choosing between your children. Like I like them all in some ways. I mean, there's certainly paths that I'm like this. I hope they choose that path because it just has this joke in it that's really funny. Or
are there any
that's
like
when
really
Jeff
big
Lewis appears and versus he won't appear and certain other paths?
Are there any big, really big visual gags? Like there's an explosion if they chose this path, but you'll miss it.
I would say. Certainly in the later episodes, there are definitely some things that you will totally get a different sort of experience. You'll have different characters you'll interface with and that you won't get in other paths. So
cool.
So it definitely grew into that.
So Matt and I are both potentially pitching shows to Echo. Who knows? We're kind of figuring it out. So tell us what makes it difficult? Like what are the difficulties in shooting an interactive show?
Hmm. Oh, so this is the part that I might ask you to delete later.
Don't tell us anything you don't want to feel comfortable.
No, I mean, I think it's just what's cool about Echo is that they really want you to, they want it to be your show and do what you want. What can be difficult about that is that they don't necessarily even really temper your expectations, or at least they didn't for me. And so there are some things that we did that I can't remember the pithy phrase for this, but it was like doing a shit ton of work for maybe very little payoff, but didn't recognize that would be the case going into it. And so there was a little of like, man, I really wish we didn't even bother with that functionality. I just don't think it was going to really, it just wasn't worth all that.
Sure.
But
yeah.
I mean, you know, that's kind of the fun of it though, in some ways, you know?
Right. Yeah. Like that's you're trailblazing. So it's it's hard to know what's going to be the most.
Right. And really, you know, maybe the thing that I think it was worthless, like maybe that's what we get all these comments and all this love about. I don't know, you know?
Right. Well, I'm curious.
We won't know until tomorrow when it premieres.
It premieres tomorrow?
It premieres tomorrow.
Oh, man. That's exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
Tomorrow, by the way, is November
14th.
14th. Tomorrow is November 14th. So when you hear this, it's already out. So you should definitely check it out. I'm really curious how you work with your actors, like when you have to do, have them do all these different versions, and how you direct like the character and the, you know, all these kind of things that when you have a linear script, it's much easier to say like, well, this is the scene where this happens and you grow in this way and you change as a character here and this is leading to that. But when you are, as an actor, less in control of your decision making, it seems tricky. What? How do you do? Do you always shoot all three versions like in a row back to back, or how do you do it?
For the most part, if, I mean, that's mostly what the script would call for, unless you're wildly changing directions or like locationally changing. But we shot, it actually kind of fed into my wheelhouse, which is I'm an improv comedian, and that's just where I cut my teeth, was doing improv. And so this is, and my entire cast is folks from that are in the improv world, UCB folks. And I do an improv show called Hammer Don't Hurt 'Em. And so like most of the, a good chunk of that cast was in this show. You know, a lot of the actors were people that I've worked with before, and we kind of have a good rapport with this. And so what's especially great about it is that in other shows where I have alts and stuff that are, that I'm like, ah, that's amazing, but that's totally going to the gag reel at best, I'm like, oh, we can maybe make a whole choice out of this.
Right.
And so it actually leaves you with a lot of opportunity and usable footage. So,
but are your actors ever like confused?
Oh, for sure. We're all confused. And it really is just remember, like you always have to preface sort of where you came from and where you're going, in every scene, so that emotionally the character will be consistent as it plays through, no matter which choice you take, because it does, like we had to keep collapsing the choices, you know, it doesn't just branch out infinitely. It has to collapse into these other, like,
right. So you kind of start
moments
and end
scene changes.
More or less the same. Those big beats always kind of dovetail back, right?
They do. Yeah. Because we're telling a continuous story. I mean, it is a serial show. So, you know, certain major things have to happen. It's sort of the how it happens. It's like that moment when you get dumped in public, the episode is, you know, it's obviously this horrible, awkward thing that she's got to go through. And it's a function of whether or not you're going to come out of that looking like, you know, a total ass and getting thrown out of the restaurant, or
I got thrown out of the restaurant.
What's that?
I got thrown out of the restaurant when I watched it.
Yeah.
There's and like I tried to not get thrown out.
I love that it's at the Elks Lodge. It's my favorite.
I shoot so many things at the Elks Lodge.
It's the best. Yeah, me too. It's like so pleasing. It's one of the most haunted places in Los Angeles.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, oh man, I'm blanking on the owner's name. But
Sandy,
yeah. If she...
She's a real kick, that lady.
She could be, you know...
Right?
A ghost, and I would not be surprised. honestly,
I think it was a children's hospital before it was.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, that's not okay.
Yeah.
You said that.
Yeah, sure. You should Google it for sure.
Yeah.
But I feel like every once in a while you end up at locations where it's like, oh, this is a totally affordable, great restaurant and also convention hall and also police station.
We shot two episodes there and a part of a third one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, yeah, exactly. Affordable, kind.
Yeah.
Like friendly ghosts. That
bunch of Caspers, right?
Yeah. But I was just saying that like there's the alternate version is, oh, there's actually several endings in that episode, but, or you can be heralded as like you flip the script on him and it's like, it's almost like you dumped him kind of a thing.
Oh, and in that ending, is she like sad outside the restaurant or is she?
Yeah, but
sad?
In the end, you're still dumped because it leads into the next episode, which is that moment when you have to find your Craigslist roommate. Or if you meet your potential Craigslist roommate because she moves out of the place, out of her boyfriend's place. Yeah. So, that's kind of, so it's the how, I guess, is what matters more than.
Yeah. That's really wise.
Yeah.
And what about like your DP and your script supervisor? Like how are they interacting with these
scripty, also named Sandy.
Branches?
Sandy
is also, by the way, the script supervisor from The Disaster Artist, which is a book that was recommended on this podcast. It's so good. Another Sandy, I'm assuming. But this Sandy ended up basically being the director of The Room, that movie, because he was the script supervisor. And he just, it never occurred to me that the script supervisor could basically direct a movie.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Huh.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, mine does all the time.
I'm sure.
My Sandy is fantastic. She, you know, it was just like a, it was an absolute war for her to try to keep track of all the alts and stuff. But I mean, you know, everything is scripted, so she has something to work off of. But so much of the show, I mean, it, we were shooting 18 pages a day for 10 days, 180 pages.
Wow.
And, so it was an absolute bear.
But 18 pages for like 6 minutes of content.
Yeah, like a 10-minute experience, I'd say, per episode, I guess. I guess you're right. Yeah, you're right. So, yeah, 18 pages, six minutes of content, right? Well, no, because it's 18 minutes of content, actually.
Right.
It's just maybe 6 minutes of a specific experience.
Right.
But all the content is usable. So the hardest part of, well, there are many hard parts, but the challenge for the crew was obviously just kind of whatever part of their brains were the director part of their brains, they had to kind of like throw away a little bit and be like, okay, no, I'm just going to do my DP thing and not, because it's like, it's too much for any person.
Sure, right. Well, did you ever have a fear that you're the only person that knows what's going on?
100%. Like most of the time I felt that way. I actually had a really good EP in Scott Kramer and my DP was actually also pretty great about being on top of it. And Milana, if anybody was like a second director, it was Milana, because she's in every single scene, every moment of that thing, and she was on her feet acting all day. And so she was pretty on top of it as well. So I mean, we're all kind of a bit frazzled, but at the same time, I don't know. I was a computer science major, and so I feel like I like understand sort of design. And were you?
You know, I was a computer science major too. Yeah.
So I just had to kind of like break things up like really logically for myself, and then I was like, okay. You know, this is an if then statement. That's all it is. It's just several if then statements. This is a for loop. Okay. I can get it. You know, I can just sort of get my brain working that way. And
so I think maybe a thing that maybe makes things kind of easier is that in certain circumstances, it wasn't like you were changing setups for each moment.
Okay.
Right?
So that's a great point. So that was what I had to limit. Mm-hmm. So versus page count, that was less the marker of whether or not this is going to be a hellish day versus, you know, setups. Mm-hmm. And we shot 3 cameras. Which was just an absolute necessity. There's obvious trade-offs to that. That
sure,
you know, kind of a bummer. You know, you want to get a really great shot. You really want to like
sure.
I mean, I had to throw away. I think for a 3-camera show, it looks really, really good. But you know, just in terms of like getting this kick-ass rack focus moment, a beautiful dolly, or just like I had to throw all that out. Like, there's probably like 4 dolly moves in this whole thing, and I, you know, planned for like 20 or something, you know, it just was a war of attrition ultimately. But
do you find though that, you know, because I feel like improv is, you could say the same thing about like shooting a ton of improv, right? It's just like, you just kind of lock everything off and let people run. And then that's kind of what you deal with. Was it a big bummer for you? Or is it just like, to me, there's something really fun and just like getting a bunch of extra jokes, getting to use those alts is so awesome.
I absolutely love it. But it's very much like the actor side of me that falls in love with that. Like, I think I'm now like the like director side of me that really wants to like shoot something beautifully is like a little bit starving.
Right.
And I don't mean to say, I do really think it is a beautiful, like it's beautifully shot and Bride killed it. But like, you know, just like, I want to shoot single camera so fucking badly. Yeah. Like, I'm just ready to, I've been on this thing for 2 years. So
like, that's natural. Like, whenever you shoot anything for a while, you just want the next thing to be the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Of it.
Yeah.
I had shot a movie with a deaf guy as the lead, and all I wanted was someone that just talks nonstop for my next movie, because I was like, he's not, it's so quiet. So in your show, it totally works that Milana is like, her character is like kind of indecisive.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think in that format for every show Echo does, where the viewer is controlling what the character does, you to have that seamless experience, you need to have a somewhat indecisive character? Because they're always kind of like, I'm not sure what I'm going to do.
I'm sure not. I'm sure, you know, it's like that thing where you sort of, you see something and you're like, yeah, this is the way it all has to be. And then someone else comes along and makes something totally unique and amazing. And you're like, oh yeah, that changes the paradigm entirely.
Right.
I feel like there's so many ways you could do the choice moments. And especially since they give you such access to their like platform, I don't know how much they're going to continue to do that. I have no idea. Cause like, we were their first series really. And I know that they were learning a lot as we were doing it. And I'm sure they were going, okay, never again, never again.
Yeah,
this.
Sure,
like, you know, for certain aspects. Of
right.
It. Cause you know, just some stuff works better than other stuff. So it worked for our character, it worked for our story, but I'm sure you could do it different ways.
Because your character is kind of someone that is like constantly trying to find the right answer to these in these awkward situations, mm-hmm. these moments right. when things yeah. are uncomfortable.
And I think that it does a really good job of kind of helping you step into her shoes as a result. You know, those moments, like there's a great sort of that character you want to jump in and kind of like guide that character's interactions. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also the challenge was like, hey, make sure it still feels like she's a consistent character.
Right.
That's specific.
Right.
You know, which I think that's like a testament to Milana and the writer, Jonathan.
And that's something you,
in
the Choose Your Own Adventure books, you were kind of lacking, right?
Totally.
You felt like you were this generic character.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess if you do like action stuff, it might be easier. Like I can imagine someone is running down a hallway and there's three doors.
Right. Like, which one do you go into?
And you have you have the amount of time it takes this character to get to the end of the hallway to make the decision.
Sure.
And so they don't actually have to stop and wait for you to decide.
Yeah. Or you can do like, you could probably do slow-mo tricks or.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's smart.
Speed. I mean, we did some slow-mo for like in episode 4. It's that moment when you call in sick and you run into your boss.
Right.
And she's in a clothing store. She's like shopping and clothing store. What a weird way to.
No, I think that, is that I think that's okay. what they call it. I mean, like an H&M type of place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I all of a sudden heard my, like,
store?
I heard my mom and my voice.
Sure. Sure.
Anyway, she was shopping and she sees her boss on the other side of it and she's got to like navigate her way through the store and trying to get out without being seen. And so we had these choice moments that were less like dialogue things and more like, which rack do you hide
in?
Right, which mannequin do you pose as? Or what do you do? Yeah, whatever. What accessory do you put on your face to try to get by her and out the door? And so we sort of enacted some slow-mo. I would say, you know, in retrospect, I wish I did 20 things better than I did, you know, for that. But I think that like, you know, had that not been a 1-day shoot in the store, had we had a 2-day shoot, like we could have done some really cool camera moves and really great slow motion stuff that would have been, that wouldn't have just been that standard sort of like dialogue choice, stuttering, kind of riffing, vamping thing.
Right.
So.
Take note, producers. If we have more days to shoot things, they can be
better.
Cooler.
Oh.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
That's cool. So what's next? You finally finished this project.
25 pages that day.
Oh, boy, 25 pages.
25 pages for 30 seconds of viewer experience.
Our grip truck showed up 2 hours late.
Well, let me ask you kind of a broader question, because it's clear there's so many different things, so many things you couldn't have even fathomed about like creating a branching story and all of that. If you could go back, what would you do differently about kind of approaching an interactive story?
Like from a writing standpoint?
Yeah, a writing, directing, all of it, right? Like start with the writing maybe.
It comes down to time. I mean, really just, we wrote this thing in like 2.5 weeks. Like Jonathan McCandless and I broke this story like while we were still making the deal. Like knowing that, because like, they're like, trust me, the deal's going to get made. I'm like, look, as far as I will go is breaking the story. I'm not going to like make this guy start scripting until.
Yeah. You can't not pay somebody else if things fall through.
But we're all on board with like, hey, look, let's just put in our best effort and we'll, this is as far as we'll go and we'll whatever. So.
And then, you pitched it with him or you pitched it alone?
So they kind of came to me with the original idea and then I repitched them. I was like, I want to do this instead kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. And how did Echo find you?
I just had a general with them.
Oh,
yeah.
How'd you get the general?
Through my manager, Kevin Herrera.
I didn't know you were with Kevin.
Yeah.
Where's Kevin?
Rad. Yeah, the machine.
Kevin?
No, but he produced the Go 90 show I just did.
Oh, what's the show? What show?
It's not announced yet, so I'll cut this part out. CVNT5.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's like an EDM show. They were production services on it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's cool, man.
Let's wrap about that later.
CVNT5 looks like CUNTS if you looked at it.
Oh, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's EDM speak,
mm-hmm.
like lead speak.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons I love Kevin is because he's really, you know, on the forefront of all these like weird, wacky digital projects.
He's a hustler. He listens to the show, actually. Great bow ties.
Great bow ties.
Yeah.
Great disposition.
Shout out to Kevin.
Yeah. He's great. And so he introduced me to they were called Interlude at the time. They changed their name to Echo. And I had a general with them, and then like a year later they called and were like, hey, we have a project we think you might be interested in. And then I came in and just kind of pitched on that, and Jonathan was already there. It was called Cringe at the time, and it was just all about like cringeworthy moments. And then it just sort of evolved from there to being like, let's make it more relatable, awkward moments. And then we kind of found this character, Jill, and I had pitched them Milana because I was like, you know, I think we had just started living together as roommates. And anyway, so she was fresh in my head, and I was like, oh, Milana would absolutely kill this. And I think she had just started her AT&T campaign mm-hmm. at the time.
So that's an easy pitch, right? You're like, yeah. Oh, she's great. Like, I know her really
yeah.
well.
And
she'll
like,
do
oh
us
my God,
a favor.
Yeah, she'd be so funny. Yeah. And then it evolved from there. And then it became that moment when. And then I wanted to do these mini games, and that sort of became a new idea.
And, mm-hmm. anyway. And so they're developing the technology with you a little bit as well, right?
100%.
Yeah, that's cool.
Like their platform is very, it's awesome because it's like anybody can really upload their own stuff and make their own Choose Your Adventure. I just wanted to add this mini game element, which required us to have, you know, programmers and stuff to like tap into their API
a little bit more. Yeah.
Yeah. And do some more.
Killer, man.
Cool. So what's your next project? What's happening now?
My next project is I'm going to shoot a page a day. Mm-hmm. And it's all gonna be Dolly moves.
Moving masters, man. Yeah. Right.
It's called Dolly.
I am how it is. I'm pitching 50 things.
Like you're pitching shows?
I'd say like I have 7 projects that are like in
various stages,
the worst phrase in the history of filmmaking. But it's just
that's part of it though.
It's just a matter of like which one's gonna hit the dartboard. I don't know.
And you're also writing and voicing a character on a Nickelodeon show.
Yeah. So that's
called
been awesome.
Glitches?
It's called Glitch Tex.
Glitch Tex.
It's a really cool show. It's almost like a modern day Ghostbusters, but instead of ghosts, they're busting video game glitches that come to life and terrorize the town.
Oh, cool.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
It's like the Matrix.
It's kind of the reverse Legend of Neil, actually.
Oh, perfect.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. How'd you get that job?
So Dan Milano, the creator, is a Guild fan and just emailed me out of the blue. I think he emailed Felicia first, and Felicia was like, you know who would be great on this show?
Oh, wow.
That's how that worked out.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah. And I had written, and that's the most use I ever got out of the Comedy Central pilot that I wrote that came from Legend of Neil. So everything.
So you had a sample, basically, and you were like, oh, yeah. Here you go.
And then he was like, oh, my God, I love this sample. That's it.
And so do you go sit in a room and in a writer's room and write all
I do.
Day?
Yeah.
Is that like your day job?
Well, I'm still freelancing, so I can kind of like pop in and out. So he was, and the show was really cool about me taking this on. Mm-hmm. And I wrote on 3 episodes like earlier in the season. And now they're like in the late stages of the final episodes. And so I'm just like popping in to consult and pick up another script or whatever.
Oh, yeah. It just reminded me, it's worth mentioning that Sandeep wrote on Miss 2059 also.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Randomly, how'd you get involved with that?
That was... So through Anna.
Anna Akana,
yeah. I just had sort of become friends with.
But you just met her through like the YouTube world?
Like, I'm not a huge YouTube fan of the, like, influencer. I mean,
she's clearly talented.
But, like, she's super talented, and I'm like, this stuff is awesome and engaging. And anyway, so I was like, I want to meet with her. And, so from there, she was actually looking for directors. And I was like, oh, I'd be totally interested in directing. And then just kind of the way it shook out was, well, would you be interested in writing on it? And I was like, yeah, that's cool, too, whatever.
Awesome. Yeah, the whole writing staff on that show was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was like you,
was
Melissa
awesome.
Hunter, who else?
Yeah.
Allison Brownstein, who was nominated for an Oscar for Hidden Figures.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
And it was Simon and Aaron, mm-hmm. Who are, you know, prolific writers.
Right.
They were on that Netflix show. Oh, God.
The Santa Clarita Diet.
Santa Clarita, thank you. That was actually my first... like room experience, really.
Cool, man. How did you like it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, I love writers' rooms. It's
seems like you would totally thrive, right? You're real pitchy. You got like, you're real fast. It's like improv skills are really great. You
if
know?
You were on so The Voice, crush. Adam Levine would say that you're real pitchy.
I'm real pitchy.
I just mean you're fast on your feet. Yeah.
I'm also pitchy, like musically as well.
Yeah, yeah. We're modulating your voice.
I'm more flat.
Yeah. I love it. It's such a cool environment, and you're just constantly just dreaming and getting paid for it.
Right.
It's great. Yeah. But I've only been in like really positive, good rooms too. So and I've heard these horror stories from folks like now I'm in this Nickelodeon room and we get a bunch of great writers through the doors. You know, people have written on Rick and Morty. But anyway, so I meet really good writers all the time. And then they talk about these like these terrible rooms.
Right.
And I just haven't experienced that yet. And I'm sure like, if there's any writers that listen that are like, they're just like, yo, you just wait, dude.
Yeah.
It's going to be terrible when you get one of those rooms. But right now, it's been incredible.
Yeah, killer, man. Yeah. And directing wise, you're just kind of like pitching around right now, like thinking of the next thing, basically.
Yeah, I'm going to go into hibernation for real. Like, I sort of decided when this project ended to really, like surrender and just kind of like trust that whatever comes, like really not go after anything.
Yeah. That's so smart because like nothing's going to get going until February or March probably for us, you know? So like you could stress about it and like be like, why isn't the phone ringing?
Which is what I normally do.
Right. Yeah. Me too.
Is constantly stress about what the next thing is. But I think I'm just gonna, it's so funny because now I think I've had a long enough track record where I look back and I go, every single thing that I got, 0% of it came from like planning what I wanted. It all came from like planning what I wanted and then doing X, Y, and Z and that not panning out, but then paying off in totally different ways.
Sure.
Like the Comedy Central pilot is a perfect example.
Right.
Like, how did I know that was going to net me a Nickelodeon show years later?
Yeah. It's impossible. Yeah.
It's all about making stuff and meeting the right people.
Yeah. Planting the seeds.
Planting seeds, it all comes around.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Well, speaking of a perfect bookend to this interview, we should probably move into our unpaid endorsements.
Unpaid endorsements. Oren, you got anything, bud?
Yeah, so my endorsement, I guess, is to, if you were trying to make storyboards and you're a horrible storyboard artist, what I do is I make photo boards, or I've been doing it lately. It's just so easy. Especially if we don't have a storyboard artist, where I just go to the location where we're going to shoot and I just have like the AD or whoever I'm with just pose in the positions that our actors are going to pose. I usually use this app Artemis on my phone that lets you like choose lenses and stuff, but you can also just do it with your regular iPhone camera. And then I have like a Keynote template where it's basically just like a storyboard template and I can just drop the pictures into this template and write the description of them. And it's pretty awesome. Like I share the boards. Obviously, you can show them to the client. They're not like beautiful storyboards. And a lot of times we're missing the props or the visual effects that will happen. But I'll try to Photoshop some stuff together. But I share them with the crew and the producers and everyone, the production designers. And they all know what direction we're going to be looking. The AD can plan the day and it's super helpful. So I just did these ones for NVIDIA, this commercial that came out like a week ago, so I'll post the boards and the final commercial. You'll see in the boards our AD is a female and our actor's male, so you'll notice that they're different genders, but other than that they look pretty much the same. So it's just real
different
fun
heights and or skin color probably matters.
They're
too
different in most ways, but the character is sitting down playing a video game, so
yeah
I'll show you guys. You let me know if it works. And you had mentioned that you had something.
Well, I was just, I mean, I haven't really even, you know, gotten into this too much, but have you guys heard about this app called Headspace?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good, though. I don't think we've had anybody recommend it yet.
So I highly recommend. It's how I'm starting my day now, which is, it's essentially, it's a meditation app, but, and it's a little pricey.
But the first 30 days
it is subscription based.
Yeah, yeah.
But the first 30 days are free, and the first like 10 meditations are free, and you can just do those over and over again. But man, it's made a world of difference for me, and it keeps track of your. And if you do, I think eventually get the subscription. It keeps track of your meditations if you care about leveling up as a
in
your enlightenment, in your path to enlightenment. But it does exactly what it says it does, which is give me headspace.
Yeah. My wife loves it, and a DP I work with, Andy Radzuski, credits it with like keeping him sane and like really intense production schedules.
Yeah, totally. And this, like, we, you know, our post was even more crazy in many ways than our production schedule. And so, you know, we were doing like 18-hour post days sometimes, and it was just,
right, because you have a zillion versions of every.
Yeah. And we could do a whole other podcast just talking about post on this.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, so I tried to, eventually my wife was like, get on that app. She's like, every time you get into the car before you drive to the post house and before you walk into the post house, you can do two meditations, mm-hmm. before and after.
Wait, you can do them while you're driving?
No, not while. You like, she's like, I'm like, I sat in the driveway and did, like, the cool thing about the app is there's a whole bunch of like 1, 2, 3 minute mm-hmm. meditations. So they're really like,
yeah, it's very practical. For
so
meditation.
Practical. Yeah. Wow. Like, you can spend 2 minutes. I mean, you're going to spend probably 2 minutes on, or 20 minutes on Facebook anyway, or on Twitter, or,
right.
Watching the world burn. But like, you know, you can do 2 minutes of an app that tells you to breathe and relax.
Let me recommend, if you ever get bored of Headspace, Oprah and Deepak Chopra have like a meditation program that they'll do. You can buy the CDs, but they'll do free 30-day trials every once in a while. And they're a little more guided than Headspace. Yeah. And I like them very much.
Yeah, no, they're awesome.
Do you know them? Yeah.
Yes.
I've so good, right?
They're amazing.
They're an app also?
There's a web interface for it, but you can just get the CDs. They're a little pricey. So like getting, like, they'll do promotions every once in a while.
Right. I think I've only done the promotional things. My wife has. Yeah.
Cool. And is that your endorsement, Matt?
No, my endorsement though. I'm down to endorse Deepak Chopra, as I like to call it.
Deepak Chopra.
But, I have a Slate article called Christine Vachon Stays Thriving by Telling the Stories That Hollywood Won't, which is a profile and interview with Christine Vachon, who's a famous producer. I actually shared this article on the Twitter already. But she's like, you know, your classic 90s film producer.
I love Christine Vachon.
She's great, right? She's like incredible. I don't know if we've talked about her book, but
Shoot to Kill. Shoot to Kill.
Yeah, and she's got another one that I haven't read. But they're just like, they're classic 90s indie New York DIY filmmaking, right? She's Todd Haynes produced her. She's done all of his movies. She breaks people all the time. And it's just like a nice reminder that like, not all of indie film is filled with skeezes, you know, and that's kind of a nice little reminder. And like, she is still making the dream happen and like making the coolest shit with the true definition of independent spirit.
That book was one of the first like director books or
really?
You know, production books I'd ever read.
Yeah. Super fun, right?
It's like that and all the Sam Raimi stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, right.
Were my first inspirations.
There was that Bruce Campbell book that he had a biography.
If Chins Could Kill,
yeah.
The Life of a B Actor.
Yeah, yeah.
That
yeah.
I have a signed copy of in my house.
Me too.
That says, shop smart, shop S smart. Yeah. Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that book is great. Well, cool, great. Sandeep, this was great. If listeners want to learn more about you, how can they find you?
So they can find me on the Twitters, at Sandeep Parikh, and also Instagram at the very same handle.
Parikh, if you can spell it. P-A-R-I-K-H, right? Oh,
that
sorry.
Is correct. No, but my,
spoiler alert.
My tagline is, if you can spell it, then you deserve it. P-A-R-I-K-H, Sandeep, S-A-N-D-E-E-P. But go check out the show. That's what I really care about. Go see the show. And you guys will link it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll link it.
But if you go to HelloEcho.com.
Hello, HelloEcho.com. HelloEcho.com.
Cool. And you'll be able to find all that stuff in the show notes. We'll link out everything there. You can check us out at JustShootItPod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at JustShootItPod. Instagram, we're going to take an Instagram in just a second, at JustShootItPod. You can follow us on Twitter at JustShootItPod. And me at Mr. Matt Enlow.
And me at Smitey Pyleg. And this episode was edited by Christopher Robert Gray. And our webmaster is Ewan Williams. And the music was provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. Leave us a note. Leave us a review, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.